Welcome to Tech Breakfast. Today's top headline served hot by your host Aaron Bewley and Tyler Gates. So grab your coffee and let's get into it.
It's Wednesday, September 30th, and we're just going to get right into it because we have a 20-minute show today, and Russ has already identified something he wants to kick it off with. So over to you, Russ.
I have. It's actually incredibly important. This is probably the biggest news that this show has ever broken, if I'm honest.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that is that there is officially going to be a Borat sequel.
What? I knew that was going to be it. He had us on the edge of our seats. But that is awesome. I saw that last night, too. And it does. It excites me.
It is exciting, and apparently it's coming out soon. They've probably been working on this since they finished the first one. It's just an incredibly complex sort of story arc that you have to deal with Borat. It probably takes just a lot of takes because I don't think they script anything. I think it's just very genuine. It's just a great, great character that we're going to get to follow, and it's coming out this year, and it's going to be on Amazon's Prime Video. So Amazon bought the rights to it to keep it alive, as they should have. They're the true American hero in this story here. So yeah, that's what I'm dropping on you guys this morning to start it off.
It's awesome. His ability to stay in character is pretty freaking impressive, right? And obviously he's dynamic. He does more than just Borat, but Borat in particular is just awesome when he's messing with people.
And I can't believe I'm writing Borat as like the first item on our topic summary.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I haven't even given you the official title.
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know.
You're going to. It says, little is known about the movie except for its official title, which just makes it even better. Borat, Gift of Pornographic Monkey to Vice Premier Mikhail Pence to Make Benefit Recently Diminished Nation of Kazakhstan. That's the entire title.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. So let's move on. Some other things happened.
How you move on from that, but where do we go next?
You just went in the show? That's the show.
I feel like that could be the whole thing.
Shut it down.
All right. VMworld 2020 kicked off.
Yeah, it did.
VMworld?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Capital V, lowercase M, capital W, lowercase O, capital R.
No.
No, is that not it? cool. So kicked off Chris Wolf, VP of Advanced Technology Group at VMware, wrote a little article going over the news announcement summary, posted it yesterday. I guess the tagline for VMware 2020 is innovating with the expectation of change. So let's hop through a couple of those things. Any of those stick out to you guys?
Man, there were a lot of things there. The SASE offering is interesting. Just it pulls through with
the
VMware.
What offering?
SASE. I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, but SASE.
SASE offering.
It's secure. What is it? Advanced remote. No, I'm butchering that. I just forgot the acronym. That's great. This is good. This is
awesome.
Don't worry
about
it.
Look that up. Fine. And we'll come back to that.
Secure Access Service Edge is what it stands for.
Is that what we're calling it? SASE?
Sure. I don't know.
This is like a segment in the industry, by the way. So like VMware is going to have components that they'll deliver for it. Other manufacturers like Palo Alto or Fortinet will have things that sort of play in this space as well. So that's what he's referring to.
Yeah. And what I like about it is that it brings a lot of technologies through acquisition and R&D together to sort of pull the thread on VMware's mantra for quite a while now. You know, any device, any application, any cloud, but in this case, it's at the end. But it's delivering securely end user experiences that are predictable, right? And it's a combination of SD-WAN, the cloud service brokers and gateway, as well as stateful layer 7 firewall and zero trust access down to that with some edge network intelligence too, which I don't know a whole lot about yet. And I'm actually looking forward to learning more about.
Sounds like a smart edge.
Smart.
I saw too.
Edge.
You can get a 6-month free trial, Carbon Black.
Yeah, and I think that's the VMware Carbon Black cloud workload, right? Or it's a specific part of the offering, but 6 months.
Yeah, I think that's what I saw too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unlimited free trial of VMware Carbon Black cloud workload essentials available for all current vSphere 6.5 and VMware Cloud Foundation 4.0 customers. So that's cool. That is cool.
Get out there. Try it.
But no, that's awesome. There was, let's see, Azure VMware solution following the announcement that Azure VMware solution is generally available. I thought it already was generally available. So that was news to me.
Oh man.
I was already aware of it, but I think that's just because we're banning.
I think it was limited access at the beginning of Azure VMware solutions. I forget exactly how it was fenced, but when it was offered through the partners in Azure's portal, which actually was only one because the second one I don't think came to be. Anyways, the Azure VMware solutions is kind of a Gen 2 deployment of the Cloud Foundation stack effectively in the Azure cloud. So
yeah, so the original VMware solution inside of Azure was from a company called Cloud Simple,
right?
Which was then acquired by Google.
By Google.
So
it doesn't play real well for
it. Yeah, so they sort of had to go a different route with what they were providing. But it's interesting. I actually presented on the Azure VMware solution to our cloud teams earlier this week or last week. It was one of the days and one of the weeks that was recent. So it's definitely something that's came along recently, gotten a lot better recently. Yeah, after the redo, I guess you could say, from the cloud simple shift, which is, you know, obviously now running Google's version of the VMware side.
Right.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, I've been looking at Azure VMware solution for a couple months now, and there's a website. I mean, you can go to Azure's website and see it. But the whole point of the announcement there too, as Chris points out, that there's now a production VMware footprint in every major public cloud. So AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, IBM Cloud, and Oracle Cloud.
Who else can
there's
say
some,
that?
There's some neat things about the Azure VMware solutions too that's compelling from a Microsoft perspective. I've been surprised as a seller in VMware's field that the groups in Microsoft are actually very aggressively positioning it for the appropriate workloads, which is great. So, I've actually got some work streams that are getting into it. And then, the Google offering, similar. That one I haven't gotten to toy with as much. But
yeah,
it
and
is
then he goes on.
Cool.
He goes on to talk about several new capabilities for VMware Cloud on AWS. I should probably plug this link. I'll put the link in the notes. But if y'all don't already follow Chris Wolf on the Twitter, his handle? Is it CS Wolf at CS Wolf? Yeah. Go give him a follow. But he goes into in the post, I just walked away from it, but several new capabilities for VMware Cloud on AWS, including VMware Cloud Disaster Recovery, VMware Tanzu support, VMware Transit Connect, new regional compliance listings. So gCloud, HIPAA, BAA, EBA, white paper, stuff like that. Enhanced automation and operations, enhanced HCX capabilities. So lots of stuff coming at you from VMware on public cloud things.
And some of those are big, right? So obviously Tanzu support, that's the VMware or Kubernetes with VMware, VMware with Kubernetes. It being able to run that sort of natively in VMC on AWS. The Cloud Disaster Recovery is the continuation of the Datrium acquisition, right? So I think a lot of this stuff has been hinted at, but some of those are pretty big. The VMware Transit Connect is related to the AWS Direct Connect gateways as well. And I would say every customer I work with on running workloads in VMC on AWS leaned into that really fast. Which is pretty cool too. So I think those are big announcements, especially for users that are using them right now. But definitely worth digging into.
Yeah, and there was a fairly large announcement too on the VMware Cloud on Dell EMC side too, running these things in kind of on-prem with that cloud IaaS feel. But VMware Cloud on Dell EMC now supports VMware HCX-based workload migration, which is a very powerful tool. That was good to see.
HCX is incredible. I actually like to describe HCX as being insultingly simple. I don't know if you guys have ever actually tried to use it, but it realistically is. I mean, it is a select checkboxes of VMs and click go. I mean, it's insane the ability to move. I mean, if you have a customer or if you are a customer, if you need to move a lot of VMs in a short amount of time, use that. It is unbelievable how simple and fast it can move things into VMC.
And one of the other big ones that dropped was, SaltStack, the intent to acquire there, which we can talk about. But I mean, it just basically comes down to kind of that end-to-end automation up into applications and all that kind of stuff. But then also, do you want to make a comment about that?
No, I'm obviously going to get a lot more familiar with SaltStack, but just for the folks that don't know, SaltStack is kind of in the same space as the Puppet Chef's Ansibles of the world. So it is, I don't know, call it that last mile for automation up into what the OS and application area or space, right? So that's pretty exciting because I think it does round out a set of capabilities with vRealize automation and vRealize suite in general, our cloud management portfolio, especially with the addition of CodeStream. Now add SaltStack to that, and it really is, you know, we're getting close to the entire footprint of what you'd need for automated deployments. And
I'll be interested to see what sort of morphs from that. There are two kind of primary ways that automation happens these days, as far as like the frameworks behind them. There's imperative and there's declarative. You know, Kubernetes is built around a declarative way of doing things, which is, you know, describe what you want, cluster handles it. So imagine going to a restaurant saying, I want a steak, medium rare, and mashed potatoes. Goes in the back and just sort of comes out to you. That's sort of declaratively how things are handled in that type of automation. Salt is more of the imperative way, right? Which is more of a, you have this set of instructions that you follow every single time. It's a repeatable task. And then you can, you know, you can go through that workflow in an automated fashion. There are some elements that it sort of encompasses both sides of it, but I'll be interested to see if it, because you guys, VMware is leaning so heavy into Kubernetes. I will be curious as to if there will be a lean in on Salt to do more declarative types of things. Not that it can't today, but just if it will do more. Or if it will be more of a, let me tie in with Terraform, which would be like the thing that everyone thinks about when they think of a declarative way of automating workloads. And I think it's an interesting acquisition. I didn't see it coming.
It's a good one. It caught me off guard too.
It definitely caught me off guard.
There were a lot of, in vRealize automation, there were a lot of hooks into Terraform in the latest releases too, 8.1, 8.2, which is, I think, set to be released or just got released.
Which is usually the case. Most of those CMPs, the cloud management platforms that like vRealize would fall into, they are usually kind of your overarching, you know, just say it, source of truth or management that has plugins into Salt or Ansible or Puppet, Chef, Terraform, you just name one of them. It can just integrate into all of those things. Yep. It uses those runbooks in order to facilitate the sort of the visualization of the infrastructure that you might create within vRealize. So it's, I'll be interested to see how much more integrated that gets. One thing I'm curious to see is if there's any implementation to be able to sort of do more discovery of brownfield deployments. But once again, like this stuff is very new as far as the one vRealize has been going through some pretty substantial changes over the last 2 years.
And fast changes. I mean, that's the other one. I don't know if this is publicly announced, but it'll be pretty obvious pretty fast. But the intent, if not the explicit goal, is to release quarterly now for the vRealize suite, vRealize automation in particular. So when it comes to integrating things like SaltStack, expect to see it move at a pretty healthy click, right?
Yeah. Speaking of vRealize, Project Magna is announced as generally available.
Magna's
help me out with that one.
I learned about Magna. It's like the
vRealize AI piece. vRealize AI. So it uses reinforcement learning to self-tune application performance. all that kind of stuff, right?
That's hot.
It's impressive. So the first time I learned about Project Magna, before obviously it was called vRealize AI, was back when I worked with the storage and availability unit that is no more. But it was targeting vSAN specifically. And when they let Magna loose, you know, when they let the AI loose at systems running vSAN for storage I/O performance, and they really let it kind of tune anything underneath the covers, because Magna can screw a lot of stuff, some of which, you know, you may not want. It's just an AI. It could go buck wild if you opened every lock, right? But some of the initial, you know, responses were just wild. Like what it changed inside the vSphere kernel basically was like, whoa, that's scary, but also impressive. So
yeah,
I'm really curious to see what this looks like in production with some, you know, safety gates in place to go and actually make pretty cool changes in real time to those environments.
Yep. Early adopters have seen performance improvements as high as 50% for read and write I/O with the read and write cache optimizations that vRealize AI made to their vSAN environments. Best of all, this is just the beginning, says Chris. So
very, for real. That's the stuff. Like the cache optimizations, those are, I'll call it a safe thing to let something go buck wild changing, right? And that's why I think we're presenting it that way. What Magna was capable of.
Does not make me feel comfortable with
the system. I know. That's why it's fenced off. Like, that's why we're just playing thrashing with cache.
I see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's the AI is capable of so much more. So this is just scratching. It really is just scratching the surface. It's gonna be awesome for self-optimization.
Is Elon Musk gonna put this in my head one day?
Probably. Yeah.
Is that what's gonna happen?
Yeah. It's gonna run on the little chip in your
brain's read-write optimization.
Speaking of things running on chips elsewhere, Project Monterey tech preview came out, which is pretty cool. Yeah, so in this wasn't a major secret. In March of 2019, they demonstrated ESXi running on a SmartNIC. This is the continuation of that, right? So
we got to get Nicholson back on to talk about that one. We'll have to tag this onto a Financial Friday session. He loves networking in general, but he's been talking about SmartNICs and Project Monterey forever.
Come with it, John. Let's hear it, man.
I mean, totally keeping it secret.
Yeah. So, and Chris writes here, you know, leading SmartNIC vendors, one of which is the one I work for, Dell, are already working with us on Project Monterey, which is currently centered around three key use cases. So you have one, network performance and security. Cool. Storage performance and dynamic composition. That's interesting. And bare metal workloads and composability. This is where it gets really interesting, as Chris said there. But imagine running the ESXi control plane on a SmartNIC, right? Freeing all the x86 host cores to run other workloads, inclusive of bare metal. It gets a little crazy. So super exciting.
Yeah, seeing where this goes, I think it's going to be really fascinating, but especially if, you know, the compute space, if Gen Z takes off and disaggregate compute becomes kind of the future, things like this will be important. Never mind that every NIC can have its own hypervisor, which is going to be capable of running all of the network security and other endpoint security sort of ecosystems that it opens up a lot of capabilities that should be pretty fascinating to see unwind.
Yeah. Let's not gloss over this. The ability here is incredible because you're looking at the possibility of running physical workloads that are leveraging vSAN and NSX, which in particular on the vSAN side of things, because NSX actually sort of blends that a little bit today.
It is
pretty next level for them to be able to extend sort of that control plane and data management side of what VMware is doing to physical workloads, which, you know, I don't know, some people listening might be saying, who is running physical workloads? Well, my friends, I can tell you that I moved over 10,000 physical clustered SQL databases last year from one storage array to another.
It's always
people are doing it, and that was terrifying. So, you know, just pointing out that there's a lot of implications here.
Yeah,
for people who are running mixed workloads on premises, and that is a lot more people or customers than you could probably imagine.
I'm really curious to see, and this is a total just dorky sort of business question, but if running it on the SmartNIC and leaving the host as a physical workload box, quote unquote, what the implications end up being for licensing. Because having come from years of supporting a software-defined data center motion at VMware and working with software-defined storage, which has a lot of flexibility, which is part of what makes it so compelling in a lot of cases, because everything can be driven through policies, one of the biggest hurdles is clustered storage can adjust host counts in certain places, you know, keeping the balance perfectly between compute, network, and storage. And there are other ways to address this too, you know, keep your ears open this week as an example. But if you're not going to, as an example, in a Hadoop cluster, you're running single workers on a host and you are making them as large as possible so that they can just consume every ounce of the resource, there are no sort of licensing implications in a SQL or an Oracle world, for instance, if you have a single stateful database or what have you, that would, you know, make the cost of licensing go through the roof in this situation, because you can't run those core-based licensed products on those hosts because they're not actually part of the hypervisor ecosystem, but you can get all of that policy-based sort of goodness anyways. I'm dying to see if that really does knock down those hurdles, or if the licensors of these software solutions end up, you know, unwinding that.
Well, hey, we got to shut it down. You got to go to another call. But before I do that, this is not a small thing. So, and as Chris says in the article here, for an in-depth look at Project Monterey, you should take a look at Kit Colbert. Why am I messing up on that? Colbert. Yeah, Kit Colbert. What? That threw me for a loop there for a second. My brain like rebooted. What was it?
Yeah, there's Colbert. A lot of details there.
Kit Colbert. Anyway, but Kit is VP and CTO Cloud Platform BU at VMware, right? Wrote a blog post on it. I'll drop it in the show notes. And then Dell's SVP of Strategy dropped a tweet yesterday that referenced Paul Perez's blog on that. Paul Perez being the SVP and CTO of Infrastructure Solutions Group over at Dell. So this is a big time strategy. This is something that you should learn. So go check it out. I'll drop the links in the show notes.
Yeah, maybe. And I want to point out one last thing that we did seem to skip over. And I'll just do it real quick because I know we have to go. And that is the Project Antria. And I don't know if it's Antri or Antria. I've never really known how to pronounce it, to be honest. But Antrea. This is an open source networking tool for Kubernetes. That so the purpose of this tool is sort of to bring programmability to the networks using OVS. So OVS, I'm pretty sure VMware created OVS. So Open vSwitch, which is used for Linux and Windows software-based networking. So they brought this as, you know, another tool to be able to be used in inside of Kubernetes as something that's included with NSXT and I think VCF. And so it's a way to get started in a maybe more simplistic fashion with some of the more intricate networking aspects of Kubernetes. But they are explicitly pointing out that for scaling the environments, it will sort of be imperative to move to NSXT to really handle that long term. But I think it's interesting that they're including it up front as maybe an easier way potentially to get started, because NSXT is more one of those with great power comes great responsibility. Yeah. And that responsibility is most certainly around the form of building it. And once you have it built, SDDC Manager will help you with managing it after that. But that's very interesting. They're really trying to help, you know, make Kubernetes more consumable. This is one of those announcements that is definitely geared towards that. So just something to keep an eye on if you're digging into it as another option that's kind of coming along with NSXT, vSphere 7, the Tanzu suite, et cetera.
Yeah, definitely a good call out. There's a lot of exciting stuff there. I'm sure we're going to have more this week too. Hopefully I can get ahead of all my meetings this week and actually dig into some of the stuff that's fairly new to me as well. But regardless, I'm hoping we get lots of good training on all of it. So that brings another Tech Breakfast podcast to a close. We hope you enjoyed it. Super VMware centric. It's an exciting week. There's all kinds of news we didn't touch, but if there's something in particular you thought we should have talked about, let us know. And please come join us on the show if you're interested in tossing out your opinions and talking tech. We will talk to you guys on Friday. Peace. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Cheers.
Later.